G'day everybody, welcome to the live video. I'm sorry I'm just a little bit late. I'm just at a venue now in Victoria where I'm going to be running a clinic for the next few days. So I've been travelling and just did a clinic up near Melbourne and down here at down in the Gippsland, and got a 2-day clinic before I head up to Shepparton Way. So got a few good questions on board, and tonight I've got two phones running, so I'm getting pretty nifty with my technology. So anyway, first question we've got is Ashley. Ashley, I want to get my mare back into work after 16 months. Before her time off, she had started rearing when anxious worked up. The worst being when trying to block some cows and it scared her, and when I blocked her from trying to run home as a truck passed us. What videos do you suggest I watch to get started? I can ride a bareback and in halter around the paddock with no issues. It's when we're out and about, we run into destination obsession and separation anxiety problems. So Ashley, to start with, I'd just like to say that I would tend to sort of go back and like all the young horse videos of like watching Fern and that sort of thing are really good videos of just working on, how to sort of use the reins and ride young horses to get them confident with us. And then I'd also look into some of the videos that I've got at clinics, especially at home, where I'm dealing with horses that want to come back to the yards. And if you've got to scroll through, you'll find the answers to there. There's videos that, where I'm just, getting horses not to hook onto the yard so much and seek a new direction. Also in the young horse videos, there's that problem too, when the horses are a little lost and get them to sort of hook onto things. But also what I'm going to talk about is, this is a common thing, separation anxiety, and what I call it is connection disability. So basically, connection disability, the reason the horse feels separated is because it feels like it's on its own. So sometimes it's a lot easier to be with a horse on the ground and they look at us and go, oh yeah, here's a person, here's another horse kind of thing. I can connect with you. But once you get on their back and their head's in front of you, then they kind of get lost and they're more anxious. So there's two areas you've got to really work on. You've got to work on the horse really understanding your age. Now, it's hard to say on a kind of a video answer, but understanding your age is every time you back your horse, every time you turn it, every time you do something, it requires a change. And so when I say to people at a clinic, take the reins until you get a change, what I mean is a change of thought. The horse has to stop thinking what it's thinking and reset its thoughts into what you're asking. So if you were taking a left rein, the horse has to think left. It can't just go left. So some people think they've got their kind of riding okay in the yards and everything's okay, but their horse is still a little crooked in the mind and body because it's still elsewhere. So there's hundreds of methods and exercises that, someone could offer you on how to get a horse, to relax or something like that. But at the end of the day, when you take a rein or you do something with your horse, it's got to make a clear change. So basically, when you're riding your horse in a safer environment to get her back with you, I'd be doing a lot of, I'm going to loose up on the rein. I'm going to be centered. I'm just going to let her go where she wants to go. How crooked is she? Is she always pulling off to the side? Is she always, leaving? If she's always leaving and doing that, then if her thoughts leave you, then you just take a rein and put a reset on her, take her in a new direction. Until you can loose on those reins and she's just cruising along with the ears back on you, not back on you pointed, that they'll just be floating between you and where she's going. So basically, if a horse kind of gets a strong focus somewhere or leaks off, instead of trying to manage them and make them stay in your line, let them leak off a little, but then acknowledge that they're thinking elsewhere and go, hey, let's go in a new direction, reset, until eventually they're thinking about you. And the other thing I'd offer a horse is a lot of, like before, when I get on it, I'd say, here I am, I'm here, and sort of get the horse to acknowledge that I'm sitting up there and we're connected. Before you even ride off, make sure you're connected. And then when you ride off, if your horse gets a little anxious, then you take a turn rein or something to take it in a new direction. After that, your horse should come back and go, oh, there was a change in there. And if you feel your horse kind of wanting to maybe kind of connect with you, then stop and just reassure it for a second, sit on it and just breathe out and just stand there together calm and kind of build yourself an island that, you know, the horse comes back to and feels okay in an environment where it feels okay, and then build that environment out, as in you'll go further and further. But you're not going to do it like, you know, I wouldn't be taking her out in big groups or anything like that. I'd be sort of working first in the yards, getting a lot of those tools working, and, you know, getting good backup, good steering, and just a good connection where the horse can center with you. And then I'd ride out a little bit, and as soon as you feel that horse get a little bit leaky and not sure about things, you can kind of take it halfway back to a place that it feels okay and resets with you, and then take it out again and treat it as if, you know, you're taking on its first ride out, and you don't take it very far. You bring them back and show them that you can bring them back and you can take them away, and you know, and then eventually the separation is sort of replaced with a connection. So it's kind of, I mean, there's so many kind of things you know, there's different things you can do, but really you're just getting her to, the mare at just the last clinic was a little bit, she was more shut down though, and we just sort of started to give her first rides back in work after quite a while, and they were just easy rides where the horse went okay, and this is kind of not too bad. And the other thing is, your horse has always got to be thinking. So, you know, that's why I allow horses to make mistakes, because it's not a mistake to them. What they're doing is right because they decided to do it. It's only wrong in our mind. So allowing them to go towards their idea for a little while is saying, well, good, I'm glad you can think. I'm rewarding you for thinking, but now you've done that. You've ticked that off your bucket list. You've relieved some tension because you went towards your thoughts. Now let's try something different. So that's why you kind of let them leak a little before you say that door's closed and ride them like that. But yeah, you might only go 100 meters and come back, and then next day a few more meters until she's kind of really calm with you, and put a bit more time into her instead of just kind of going out in the big wide world and chasing cattle and all sorts of things when she's still struggling with just finding a connection with you. Thanks for the question, Ashley. It's a, you know, common thing, separation anxiety and anxiety in horses, and it's not always that easy to deal with. It takes a little bit of time. So Constance, what can I do to get more engagement on the hindquarters in the canter? Actually, my mare falls on the forequarters and then doesn't react to any aids anymore. Okay, she's probably on the forequarter before you canter, Constance. I've sort of seen a couple of videos of her, and I think she's traveling more on the forequarter most times anyway. And there's a lot of softness work you can do before you canter. So I have to become very massive. What I don't really want, what I do is no cantering, instead doing some exercises like the walk, backing up, etc., and trot, small circles and transitions to engage the hindquarters. Do I have some ideas? Okay, Constance, so there's so much before a canter that can be done. You know, even the way you pick up a rein, okay, so something I work on a lot with people is, when you pick up the reins, does your horse lift and feel kind of enthusiastic, or does it just kind of go, oh, the reins, and stay down on his forehand or something like that. So in the walk and stuff like that, something you might want to start to practice is loosen the reins, just pick up the weight of the reins and see what your horse does. Does it kind of lift and go, oh yeah? Or does it kind of go, yeah? When it backs up, is it backing up correctly? So when you pick up the reins, is it lifting the wither and backing up correctly? Is its shoulders loose? And is it kind of, you know, driving from the hind quarter and pulling? Or is it just kind of pushing and just, you know, backing up heavy? So those things are important to look at, because every time you pick up the reins, a horse can automatically mentally get heavy through the whole body just because that's the brace it has in the reins. So before I even say to you, okay, what exercises could you do? Every exercise will be a problem if it's not done correctly. So I could say to you, well, okay, sometimes to get a horse to engage his hindquarter more, you could sort of do some little, like they're similar to shoulder in, but you just get the horse to step underneath its ribs a little bit. So a good quality hindquarter yield can get a horse to engage his hindquarter, but a bad quality hindquarter yield can get a horse just to plonk its shoulders down. And if its shoulders are plonked down when you're riding, it's not going to engage its hindquarter very good. It's not going to be nice and equally balanced to collect itself. So what you want to really be looking at is possibly when you take your back up, when you pick up the reins, that the horse loosens and picks up in the base of it, loosens in the base of the neck and picks up in the wither and loosens in the shoulders. And every time you pick up the reins, that should happen. You should get some desire in your horse and you should get a lift in the wither. And then when you're slowing your horse down to prepare to canter, what happens is it's loosening and picking up and being prepared to kind of lift out. So unfortunately, it's hard to kind of give you the magic kind of answer, because I would say that there's a, like when I've watched a couple of videos, I've heard there's a lot of quality we can put in, and in some areas you may have to firm up a little on the reins and say, okay, you know, stop going down there. So I would start to ride maybe for a little while when you pick up on the reins, instead of kind of picking up in your normal comfortable position, I would pick up the reins up higher in the air. So when you pick up to slow her down and to back her up and things like that, you pick up higher. So she's, and when you pick your reins up higher, what'll happen is she might bend in the pole and the jaw, but what you'll feel, because they're higher, you'll feel a push in the reins. If they're low, you won't feel the push because it's, your reins are coming from a different angle and a head will kind of roll under and you won't notice it. But when you pick your reins up high like that, you'll feel a push down. And I'd say when you're slowing her down, that she needs to kind of not push down like she does. And it may mean that she lifts her head up a little bit, and it doesn't look pretty to start with, but what happens is they start to kind of go, oh, and they get a little lighter in their shoulders, and instead of kind of just bearing down like that, and then they'll loosen. And a really good exercise is to get a horse just to, when you pick up the reins like that, they can pick up with the reins like that, and you can do it in a standstill. So whereas a lot of horses, you pick up the reins like that and they push down like that and they kind of bend their head like they're supposed to roll under, like a little kind of, you know, because a lot of times we get a bit obsessed with the kind of the pole and the jaw kind of, you know, loosening and bending, and then sometimes the horses just push down and do that. And in your corners and stuff like that, maybe try and start to sort of lift your inside rein just a little higher when you're using your direct rein, so she kind of, when she pushes down like that to come into her corners, she's not kind of, you know, pushing, and she'll lift a little and come around the corners, and maybe just change those rein positions just a little and see if you can help her to come up in the wither. And then if she can kind of, you know, loosen up and lift a little with the reins, then maybe if those shoulders are light, then when you start to do your hindquarter yields and stuff like that, the shoulders will be light and she'll step underneath herself really nicely, and in a nice floaty kind of fashion. And yeah, that'd be really something to look at. So then I'd be doing like taking her and doing hindquarter yields where she just steps underneath the ribs and really gets confident in her hind end. And the other thing I'd be doing is forequarter yields, as in, you know, when a horse really looks back to that open rein and sits back underneath itself and steps over and loosens up in those shoulders, they really, really get confident on their hind end and loose and nice. And so that all those exercises are kind of like a bit of a prerequisite to maybe step up into the canter. And when it's a habit for her to hold herself up nice and move nice, then when you kind of come back to slow her up to go to canter, she's going to loosen and pick herself up, and then you ask for canter. But you wouldn't ask for canter for very long. Just work on the nice step up into canter, not canter till she goes canter downhill. Okay, so you'd only canter for two or three or four strides, and then you might just take, you know, slow her back and say that's enough, because she might be one of those horses that after a bit of canter and she just gets heavier and heavier and heavier and starts to go on the shoulders. So then I wouldn't let her canter for that long to get all kind of heavy. I'd probably say let's slow down again and work on some like stepping underneath your rib cage a little bit with your hind feet, you know, rolling over your hocks a little bit more, opening up those shoulders, nice back ups, and then I'd say now let's lift up into a canter, and make carrying yourself in the slower speeds, you know, you kind of work them a little bit like a workhorse, and get them to turn, you know, because all these sort of circles and stuff doesn't sometimes teach a horse to kind of operate. It doesn't teach a horse confidence on its feet. Sometimes just like stepping over its hocks and moving out over there and stepping around its, you know, stepping around its front end a little bit while its front end's light, and, you know, sort of tighter turns and things like that, that get the horse kind of really, you know, moving closer and closer, so the front feet and the back feet are closer together and it's lifting up nice. And then from when the horse is in that kind of frame of mind and in that, you know, like that in the body, then you can say, now let's come out here and just lift up into a canter, and the horse will just step up into canter. But you need a good accelerator, and that takes a bit of time. You know, you might have to get her to come back and say, let's get a bit of spring. Let's get us a bit of spring. And so you've got to have a bit of spring, and you've got to have a sensitive enough on the reins that when you pick them up, she kind of lifts up. So, it's like, oh, all these things. I wish I could say there's this one lesson that'll just fix it, but it's the conversation you have in the reins. It's the conversation that, and you know, you might have to firm up in some areas and say, you know, stop thinking down there and don't go down there, because she's kind of got that little bit of a shut down kind of way about her, that little mare. And yeah, but good luck, Constance. I know you're really doing a good job and trying hard. So, but yeah, anyway, think about it, and I hope that works for you. Okay, Karen. At the recent clinic, you talked about not touching a horse in a highly anxious state, which is such a human natural response. It made sense to me, though, on some instinctive level, and I wonder if you could discuss it more so I can cement in my brain and start a new habit. Also, you described to me how to get a more neutral seat when riding and stop moving forward with the horse's movements so much. I promptly forget how you described it. Good question, Karen. I had a bit of confusion at a clinic a while ago where one of the students said they were confused because there was a scientific kind of horsemanship study done that scratching releases hormones, endorphins, and that's correct. It probably does. I'd like a back massage and I'm going to relax. Horses scratch each other. They love it. They mutually groom, and it really releases releases endorphins, and they feel really good about it. But my theory on things is when a horse is in a highly anxious state, the first thing it seeks is safety. A horse doesn't have a union meeting with another horse and say, hey, everybody, let's feel okay and let's do some sort of breathing exercises and let's scratch each other to relax. Horses go to safety, and then when the danger's gone, they relax. So people sometimes make the mistake of, and I say to people, I say, we're here to help our horses. And sometimes that's a negative thing in the sense that the people actually go up and say, I'm here to help, I'm here to help, I'm going to help you, I'm going to... well, no, we're not occupational therapists, we're not psychologists, we don't step in there and sort of, you know, have an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, say, you know, we just say everything's okay. We don't say, are you okay? We say everything is okay. I'm okay. I'm happy with what's happening around me. And I'm confident about that. And the horse goes, wow, I like being around you because you say it's okay. You think it's okay. If you start to direct your, you know, helping enthusiasm on the horse, you start to kind of look at them going, oh, it's all right. I'll do all these things to help you. And the horse is going to start to say, well, things mustn't be okay because you're really trying to tell me that I'm not okay. Whereas we should just say, it's okay. Everything's okay. So scratching when a horse is in a highly anxious state, I think can sometimes smother horses. So if you don't know, like you may know your horse well enough, but a lot of people have horses that are still a little shut down around people, or, you know, anxious of people, and they don't trust them when they get anxious. So when the horse goes up near that red zone, they don't want to be scratched by someone. That's going to actually make them feel a little bit intimidated or you know, threatened. But if you can kind of get them down out of that state a little bit, and then maybe there might be a time that you could go and rub on a horse and make it feel good. But if you rub them at the wrong time, you could be just interfering with them when they need to kind of just think about stuff. So I kind of say, you know, don't want to interfere with them when they're in a highly anxious state. You just want to be there to offer them a feeling of safety so they can go, I'm confident with you and I'm safe. Once they're safe, you can do all the scratching and mutual grooming and all that stuff, and it won't be a problem. But to me, I think horses seek safety to get rid of that adrenaline. They'll follow the lead horse. That when the lead horse says things are a little bit tricky around here, let's move over the hill or something like that, then they follow that horse, get over the hill, and let's all eat grass and be happy again. And that's what we do. We offer them safety first. When they come down a little bit, then we can maybe go in and touch them, because some horses may relax when you scratch them and sing to them and all that sort of thing, and that may help them. But a lot of horses may just think that's a bit of a too much information, when they need just a bit of room to sort of settle and find a safe place in a person. I hope it doesn't get too dark. I've realised that it's we're slowly losing light, so I know you can still see me, but I'm at a new house, so I don't really know where the lights are, so hopefully I can get through the questions first. Okay. Oh, the other thing that you said about seat, sorry, I nearly missed the rest of the question. The other thing about seat is some people come to my clinics and they think, oh, I'm going to do horsemanship and learn about the inner Zen and the Yoda and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, there's so much in it. But when it comes to seat, you know, when we're teaching, what I see is when I do a clinic, I look at red flags and I see people and horses come in, and I say, geez, okay, what am I going to work on? Is it going to be teaching this person how to be a Jedi Knight around their horse? Or is it going to be, what's the red flag? So I see these little red flags pop up and I go, oh, gee, that horse really, really grabs onto that bit and is frightened when that bit's in its mouth. And it's really sort of anxious when that person's on the ground on one eye and it really gets frightened at that. And I look at those things, and then I look at what the person's doing and what the horse is doing. And I kind of sort of nitpick out the red flags first, the ones that really trouble the horse, because I'm more interested on fixing the troubles that the horse has than teaching the person to be a Yoda. Yet that will come when the person can recognise their horse's troubles. So seat is one of those things that if we sit up there, we use our seat. But a lot of times, if we change our seat in a certain way and try and kind of manipulate the horse through seat, you know, we're going to put my cheekbone here and I'm going to bend my shoulders here. A lot of times people just put a brace in themselves, and even when you're pushing a horse to make it walk faster, a lot of people push forwards and backwards when the horse is actually just going sideways like that. So you're best off just sitting on the horse and just relaxing, sitting up there like a tourist on a beach ride, and just letting that horse carry you along, and you'll probably get out of the way of your horse better than if you're actually trying to do something. Because when you're doing something, if you're not doing it exactly right, you're probably actually in a different rhythm to your horse. So that's why I encourage people, don't worry about your seat, because at the moment we're just worrying about, well, your horse doesn't move forward off the legs, and also it's really troubled in the rain. So you could sit up there and not even have a fancy seat and it wouldn't matter, because there's all these other problems that that are causing the horse trouble. And then when the horse is really balanced in the reins and understands the legs, then your seat can come in and maybe show a little more. But over time, you find your seat starts to do stuff without you kind of making a big deal of it. And like if you're loose and floating and then you twist your shoulders and twist your seat, it puts a brace in your body. And often that brace on a sensitive horse actually restricts the turn opposed to sort of helps the horse turn. So I know I might sort of be turning a few kind of people going, oh, you know, funny about when I say that, but you know, I'm big on just let's work out one thing and then let's work out the other. And trying to push the seat and do the steering and all this all on a horse is still having, you know, troubles with different things. There's too much information. So I'd say have a more relaxed seat when your horse is moving. So seat changes happen, like when you stop, you'll sort of come back in your seat in a certain way that says your core's slowing down, so it adds a change to your seat. But when you're going, you shouldn't be pushing to go. You shouldn't be pushing the seat all the time, because it's just like a wriggly thing on a horse's back that I think interferes with them. So yeah, I hope that helps, Karen, and that's just my opinion on it. And I've seen a lot of horses where the person's relaxed and the horse has walked out faster, but when they were pushing with their pelvis or pedaling with their pelvis and legs, the horse was kind of slow because there was too much friction. Anyway, hope that helps. So, Wendy. Hi, Mark. I have a float loading problem like the rest of Australia and all the horses that spend an hour learning how to go on a float and the rest of their life learning how to do a flying lead change. Hi, Mark. I have a float loading problem. Poppy is a 9-year-old mare and have been battling for approximately 5 years with getting on her. I've literally tried every method there is. She starts to get anxious even from the paddock when she sees me hooking it on. Okay. What she does is take her head to the right, get the rope along her body and bolt. And believe me, you cannot stop her. Okay. I have... Oh, crikey, what have I just done? Oh, I love... Oh, here we go. Oh, it's a big question. I have had 4 of the best clinicians in New Zealand help me with it, and she has had 2 of them on their knees trying to hold her. She will then literally lose her mind and run around, threaten to jump a gate. She is done and got stuck halfway over the fence. I've tried feeding her in the float. I've loaded her on the other side of a mare. She would always load beautifully. I'm just going a bit quick on this one. I thought I might be onto something, but the other day we went on a trek and tried, but... Okay. Okay, so, sorry it's getting dark, everybody. Can you see me? I don't have a torch either. Basically, she needs to go away from that horse float, and you need to teach her how to really understand lead pressure, and I mean really understand it. You've got to teach her how to soften with that lead rope, follow a feel anywhere, left, right, backwards, and she should be able to walk her slowly backwards, fast backwards, little tiny steps, forwards, you should be able to take a lead, and she's very happy with that lead rope, okay? Next thing you've got to start to do is maybe put that float in a paddock and have a fair distance from her and the float. Then you're going to have to possibly work on the bubble. And the bubble is when she gets to that float and reaches that threshold where she's kind of really frightened, and then you just kind of let her to come out of that, and you're going to have to slowly. So maybe what I would tend to do, like when I approach a horse float, is maybe if you had the horse float in a paddock where you got a fair distance, I would walk past that horse float and I'd have a really long rope on her, so she can, you know, you've got to be good with your rope so she doesn't get tangled up, but I would actually let her drift away from the float. So say the float might be 200 metres away, 100 metres away, depending on her threshold and where the bubble is I would just walk past the float and she would drift out on one eye more, she'd come in and she'd drift out on the other a little less, and there'll be one eye she wants to look at it with, or she wants to look at it with two eyes. Some horses will run away on one eye and then they'll kind of want to look on their other eye because they've got a stronger focus eye, and that one eye will draw them in more and things like that. So I would just walk around that float at a distance, or kind of like, almost like you were kind of going like backwards and forwards, like a sheepdog would a mob of sheep, just like that. And she'll be on a long lead, so you'll be closer to the horse float. So you might be 100 metres away from the float, she might be 103 metres away from the float. She'll go out because you might have a 10-metre lead rope on her, you know, just or a lunge line or something, and she'll go away, and you'll come back, and she'll actually start to get closer and closer with you, and there'll be times that she looks at the horse float and really thinks about it, and you'll just stop and just let her think. If she wants to go back a little, well, she can, and you'll just keep sheepdogging that horse float, like just like a sheepdog moves a mob of sheep. At a distance until she starts to kind of get a little closer and closer and starts to think. And so you're working with the bubble as if you were sort of walking up to a young horse and catching it. And then you'll get closer and closer and closer, and then you'll just kind of eventually, you'll hope that you might just kind of connect with it and sniff it, and then you'll just leave it for that day. And just, you know, you might even only get halfway there. But basically, if you don't have very good tools on her, then she's going to run off. And if the fact that she can run off means that she's not leading very well. And the other thing is if it's such a serious problem, you might have to do it at a big distance. And then you might have to take a week or so of just getting her up to sniffing that ramp and connecting with that horse float herself, so she's actually thought about it herself. And then you can start with the loading process, and you know, some of the videos you might have looked at, like Fern and things like that, of getting her to step up, step off, will start to help. But I would work on the process of her connecting with the float from a distance until eventually she's up to that float, and you know, you've got that working. And then go through with the other loading stuff, but it you might have to spend a bit more time. We're definitely leading and getting her to connect with it. Tony, before it gets dark, you're the last question, so I might quickly get that done. Can you just briefly explain where the new videos are, equineability.com or YouTube Vimeo? I'm a bit confused. Tony, can't help you, mate. I'm Mr. Technology Not, and you send an email to Jenny or text her or phone her personally, and she will let you know everything you need to know. We've been having some website things where we're changing over, and Jenny's been pulling her hair out, trying to make sure everything works okay, and there's been a few little glitches, so just bear with us on that, and probably talk to Jenny about that, and she'll help you. So yeah, thanks everybody, and hope everyone's getting some rain. I know people are getting a bit of flooding, but we had 36 millimetres yesterday apparently, so I'm very happy about that. Hopefully I'll go home to see some green grass, and yeah, won't have to feed so much stock. But thanks everybody. And if anyone's down, check the website to where I am in Victoria. I'm in Victoria for a little while and then out to Condobolin. And so anyone's interested, I'm down in the kind of Gippsland area, kind of central southern Victoria. And yeah, come and say good day. I'll see you later.